Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Amber Antoinette Ford has supported Independent Tech News directly for 5 years, and you can be as cool as Amber. Become a DTNS member right now at patreon.com/DTNS. This is the Daily Tech News for Friday, March 29th, 2019. Was going to be Brexit Day. It's not anymore. In Los Angeles, I'm Tom Merritt.
And from Studio Feline, I'm Sarah Lane.
It's Art Prov Friday. I'm Len Peralta.
And I'm the show's producer, Roger Chang.
Len will be illustrating our topics today. We'll check in with him in a little bit. And we're also welcoming Rob DeMillo, CTO of Nimble Collective, back on the show. Rob, how's it going?
Good. Thanks for having me back on.
We are going to talk about a very interesting trend in gaming. It's very similar to what we talked about last week with Google Stadia and whatnot. But Rob's got a different perspective on this from a VentureBeat article about how a lot of these companies are accidentally gaming companies. And we'll get his perspective on that in a little bit. Let's start with a few tech things you should know.
Huawei reports profits rose 25% in 2018, led by its fast-growing phone and devices business. Devices revenue specifically rose 45%, passing its telecom infrastructure business revenue, which was a bit of a drop at 1.3% for its business with telecom carriers. Enterprise business was 10.3% of total revenue and rose 23.8%. 51.6% of Huawei's business comes from China, followed by 28.4% from Europe and the Middle East, 11.4% from Asia and the Pacific, and 6.6% from the Americas.
Apple acquired the digital newsstand app Texture last year, and now part of what's now Apple News Plus, which launched on Monday. So the Texture app is shutting down. According to emails sent to current Texture subscribers that point to a FAQ on the company's website, Texture's last day will be May 28th, 2019. If you're an existing customer, you will be offered a one-month free trial to Apple News Plus.
The LG G8 ThinQ phone first previewed at Mobile World Congress and will come to the U.S. starting at April 11th, with pre-orders available now. The list price for an unlocked version is $819.99. The G8 ThinQ includes Air Motion that lets you perform some functions by gesturing with a wave or a pinch without touching your phone. The camera can also use the veins in your hand as authentication. Think about that one for a second.
And Lyft priced its IPO shares at $72 ahead of the initial offering of 32.5 million shares, valuing the company at around $20 billion. Shares rose 20% after the debut on NASDAQ today under the ticker Lyft, L-Y-F-T. All right, let's talk a little bit more about Windows 10.
Microsoft Windows 10 1809, sometimes formerly known as the Windows 10 October 2018 update, is now ready for broad deployment by its business customers. After its release last October, Microsoft had to pull the update because of data loss bugs and issues with zip files. You might have been affected by that. Microsoft re-released the update November 13th, but took a slow approach to rollout this time. The company is close to finalizing the rollout of Windows 10 1903, sometimes referred to as the April 2019 update, and let's hope that sticks.
Yeah, that's the hopeful name of it, is the is the one right after the October update. Yeah. I mean, rollout to business customers means they finally certain that there shouldn't be problems with this beyond the normal expected problems with any rollout.
Hi, this is Matt
and Sean
from Two Black Guys
with Good Credit. If you own or operate a business, whether it's a local operation or a global corporation, partnering with Bank of America could be your smartest move.
By teaming with Bank of America, you'll enjoy exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful, you'll make every move matter.
Position your business to capitalize on opportunity in a moment's notice.
Visit bankofamerica.com/bankingforbusiness to learn more. What would you like the power to do? Bank of America, N.A., copyright 2024.
The Claude 3 model family from Anthropic is your one-stop shop for enterprise AI. With models at every point on the price-performance curve, you no longer have to make trade-offs between intelligence, speed, and cost. Claude 3 Opus sets new industry benchmarks for intelligence. Sonnet strikes the perfect balance between skills and speed, and Haiku is the fastest and lowest cost model in the market, perfectly designed for high volume, high speed use cases. Join the thousands of enterprises who trust Anthropic to keep them at the frontier. Visit anthropic.com/Claude today.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
They were being extra cautious with that. Rob, I was curious if you ran into any of this and what you made of it.
I did not. We've got about a third of the people at Nimble have Windows boxes, and we turned off our updates for this reason, right? So I actually haven't turned mine back on yet.
Yeah, well, it's safe to go back in the water.
Are the sharks gone? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And then turn it right back off in case you're worried about the April 2019 update. It's a weird thing. It was a weird situation there. And hopefully the April 2019 update will not have these same issues. Fingers crossed.
It was bizarre for Microsoft, actually.
It really was. And I'm not trying to excuse it, but it was very unusual. Not that Microsoft hasn't had a share of bugs over the years, but this was a really, really unusual rollout. So
this is the first one I heard of that actually removed data.
Yeah, not good. Yeah. Definitely not good. Back in 2016, the city of Columbus, Ohio, won a $40 million Department of Transportation grant and an additional $10 million from the Paul G. Allen Foundation as part of the Smart City Challenge. Columbus is developing a Smart Columbus operating system with some of that money. It's also working on an open data platform, a multimodal trip planning app. But Ars Technica's Jonathan Gitlin reports the plan to encourage adoption of electric vehicles in the city is showing the most success so far. Since 2017, adoption of electric vehicles, or EVs, in Columbus has risen 121%. That's compared to 82% for the rest of the Midwest. So it's rising a lot in the Midwest, but it's rising a lot more in Columbus. And the average in the United States as a whole is 94%. A big part of the strategy that Columbus used was ride and drive road shows, where they'd go to different places in the community or even some workplaces and allow you to do test drives. They say they've done about 7,000 test drives. They also opened a showcase center where you can go and do test drives of EVs if you'd like. They did a bunch of outreach with the dealers to get them on board and make it easier to actually go in and find an EV to buy. The program also is building out charger capacity, including rebate funding for multi-unit residential buildings and workplaces.
You know, before the show, we all kind of collectively did a little homework on the city of Columbus, because none of us is from there. Tom, I know you've been there. I never have. But I know that it's known as a college town and probably progressive in the sense that something like these numbers would make sense to me. But yeah, I wonder what other data points make Columbus so sort of ripe for this technological forward thinking?
Well, I would imagine that it's probably the car manufacturers are probably pushing Columbus a little bit because it's cold, right? And EVs have a hard time in the cold. And so it makes for a good test bed, potentially.
Yeah, and to kind of say, kind of prove the concept, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That, you know, also, I wouldn't look past the fact that Columbus had to fight against around 80 other metropolitan areas to convince the Department of Transportation that it had the best plan. We're very used to criticizing governments for stupid plans, and there's no shortage of examples. This could be an example of a government planning something well and just doing it right and saying, hey, you know what? When you get people to test drive stuff, they're more likely to get on board. When you actually work with dealers instead of just requiring them to do something and you get them on board, that helps stuff. So, you know, it may not be that Columbus had any natural advantage. It just may have been a really well-executed plan for once.
If you're an Amazon Prime member who has linked your account to Twitch Prime, you can now get 12 months of Nintendo Switch Online for free. Even if you've already paid $20 for that Switch Online account, for the free year, we'll stack on top of it, so you get the money back. Users get 3 months free to start. Then after 60 days of maintaining their Amazon Prime membership, they get a code for the other 9 months. The initial three-month offer expires September 24th. So if you're interested, now's the time.
I tried to sign up for this, but they require payment to be linked. So it is one of those deals where they're going to be like, you can go and turn it off, but you got to give me your credit card or PayPal information right now. So I was like, you know what? I'm going to find out if this is actually unavoidable before I go ahead and finish signing up. So I haven't finished signing up yet. But otherwise, it's a screaming deal. I mean, the idea that that Amazon would do this for Nintendo, I mean, it's not that they're necessarily competitors, but it's an interesting partnership.
Well, it drives traffic towards Twitch, right?
Yeah.
That's part of it. And this might be the thing that actually gets me to try a Nintendo Switch.
Really? It's only a $20 savings, but it's enough of a savings,
huh? It just pushes it a little bit over the edge, I've got enough gaming platforms, so I didn't need another one, but this is kind of interesting.
And you're right. It takes some gamers who use the Switch and pushes them towards Twitch. It also takes some Twitch people and pushes them, in your case, towards the Switch, which they may not have been willing to do before. So it does sound like it's working. And again, it's not like Amazon has a whole, you know, big gaming platform yet that isn't Twitch. They're more wanting to capitalize on what a Nintendo does rather than compete directly with them. So I guess it makes sense, but a pretty great deal. And also interesting how they're trying to stop you from like signing up for Prime for 1 month just to get this year deal and then canceling. They're going to make you stick around for 60 days and remember to renew it. So hopefully I remember. Scientists building a helicopter that will be part of the Mars 2020 rover tested it in Martian-like conditions in GPL's space simulator. If you don't know, the Martian atmosphere is 1% as dense as Earth's. That would be like going up 100,000 feet on Earth. That's the rarity of the atmosphere on the surface on Mars. So the JPL team injected CO2 into the 25-foot-wide vacuum cylinder after removing all the rest of it. Nitrogen, oxygen, argon, all the other gases got taken out. A motorized lanyard tugged at the helicopter to simulate the Mars 2/3 Earth gravity, and the helicopter successfully flew for 1 minute at an altitude of 2 inches in that thin atmosphere twice on two separate days. So not long tests, but enough to make these guys feel like, you know what, I think this will work.
Getting somewhere, yeah.
Yeah. The rover and the helicopter expected to arrive on Mars in February 2021.
Yeah, that last little sentence was the thing that made me go, what? So being ex-JPL, like the fact that they like did those tests in that chamber were tremendous. But if I read all the articles on this topic, they all seem to imply that's it. They're not testing in any other scenarios.
No, it does. I have seen some quotes where they're like, the next test we'll do will be on Mars.
That's cocky.
You don't think 2 inches?
Considering that the test seems successful, but at very short periods of time. So, if you can, you know, figure out the atmosphere at Mars, great. When it's locally on Earth, but actually doing that on Mars is very different.
It was in a calm environment in a simulated tube in a room in California.
We got it.
Well,
we're done.
You're well more versed in this stuff than I am, but that implies to me that all they were testing for was lift. Can we get enough lift in this kind of thin atmosphere?
Correct. That's exactly what they were testing for.
Yeah.
But they didn't test updrafts. They didn't test, like, there's a lot of stuff that happens on Mars. The atmospheric pressure isn't enough to actually affect the helicopter that much, but there are other factors that as far as I can tell, has not been taken into consideration. I could be wrong, but...
Well, yeah, I mean, they may have been taken consideration in the design, but it certainly wasn't part of this test. Right. That said, I mean, this, if you haven't caught on, this is a UAV. This is a drone, right? It's a helicopter-style drone, but so are quadcopters, right? And it's going to be, if it works, you know, plugging around on Mars, getting a much wider view than a rover can.
Yeah. I hope it works.
That's great. I hope your skepticism is wrong. Or unnecessary.
I hope so too.
Yeah, because this is good. Mars 2020 rover, remember, arrives in 2021. It launches in 2020 and arrives in 2021.
Well, if you thought the last story was interesting, this next one may surprise you. Inmates at two prisons in Finland are classifying data to train AI for a startup called Venu. The company is building a database to help businesses find contractors. Venu needs business articles to be categorized by topic, including differentiating things like Apple, the tech company, from a company that harvests apples, the fruit. Two very different companies. The data is then used to train the AI to manage that database. For English language English articles, Venu uses Amazon's Mechanical Turk, but they weren't getting enough work done on Finnish articles, so they contacted the Finnish Criminal Sanctions Agency, or CSA, which happens to be in the same building as Venu. It's very convenient. Venu pays the CSA what it would have paid Mechanical Turk, and the CSA then decides how much of that goes to the prisoners. That's my question.
Yeah.
How much of it does go to the prisoners?
Well, there's a whole social and criminal justice aspect of this conversation about exploiting criminal labor, right? That's not new. What's new is, instead of having them, you know, make widgets the classic example is license plates, you're having them categorize articles to train an AI, which is new. Two things occur to me. One is this does seem to point the way to tasks that will still require humans, which is categorizing things to train an AI, which could be hopeful for future work conditions. But also the fact that you couldn't get enough fins on Mechanical Turk to get your training data set. I think that's interesting. A lot of English language speakers in the world, not necessarily native, who might be on Mechanical Turk, but not enough Finnish speakers. So there again is another area that you might not have thought of as, there is a need here that mere technology alone has not solved.
Well, and the conversation can get muddied pretty quick, right? Because you think, okay, well, if you have a large group of people, I mean, large considering however many people are in a particular prison, doesn't even matter the country, but the fact that they, it's mandatory labor, right? And this is something that is making an AI, whatever it is, for whatever company, stronger and more sound based on human interaction. Does that bother anybody? You know, and if so, in what way should it change?
Well, there's a little bit of a science fictional aspect to all this, right? You've got a contained captive audience in the very literal sense of the word, who are being used to train a neural net, right? And it feels a little weird, comma, and then you step back and like, well, you know, prisoners made license plates in the U.S. for a long time, which was forced manual labor.
And you guys have both, I very, very ineffectively tried to steer us away from that aspect of it, because I don't think we can solve
that.
It's not our area of expertise. Having prisoners do this is going to be controversial to a lot of people. What I was trying to point us at is, what if it wasn't prisoners, though? You've got two very interesting things going on. Is one, you still need humans to train an AI. And two, the reason they resorted to prisoners was because the CSA happened to be in the building with them. If the CSA hadn't been in the building with them, they may not have ever thought of that And what would they have had to do if Mechanical Turk, which is meant to solve this problem, didn't solve it? Would they have had to create something within Finland? I mean, we think that, like, oh, you just put it on the internet and everything's available. And this is an area, this is, I think, a very interesting example where that didn't work.
Well, the reason you can't separate the two is because that the solution would involve money, right?
They are paying the CSA exactly the same money they would have paid Mechanical Turk, right?
Okay.
So,
well, but okay, but in, and Tom, I totally get the point you're making. I think in the example of Finland, what we've been seeing is Finland's like, we just don't have enough data. Like, we almost have to like force people to give us more data because the Mechanical Turk actually doesn't work for us. That is not necessarily a case that would, that matters to all countries, but that is interesting in this case.
Yeah, there aren't enough Finnish speakers who are willing to work at Mechanical Turk wages. And that is a point where it is, I think, relevant to bring in. And so they had to go to they ended up going to prisons where you don't have a lot of choice. Email us your thoughts on this. feedback@dailytechnewsshow.com. If you want to get all the tech headlines each day and keep up, check out dailytechheadlines.com. You can get it all in 5 minutes, Monday through Friday, with a recap of the entire week that comes on Saturday. VentureBeat's Dean Takahashi writes that he has often divided game companies into intentional and unintentional game companies. So intentional would be the ones you think of, Electronic Arts, Sony, Xbox, etc. But platforms like Apple, Amazon, Google, and Facebook, he calls unintentional because the platforms were created for something else. But gaming then arose on those platforms anyway. Although with Facebook, you could argue they just bought Oculus, and that's really where the big games come in Facebook. But these are companies that weren't started to be game companies and are now becoming game companies intentionally. For instance, recent examples are Google Stadia, where Google said, well, I guess gaming was coming into our platform. Let's lean into it. Apple with Apple Arcade is another recent example. I know this caught your eye, Rob. What is it about this sort of metaphor that fascinates you?
Well, I mean, so the company I'm at now, Nimble Collective, where I'm the CTO, this is what we do, right? So we are a streaming company for animation systems. So animators can get on and access GPU-based machines, stream their animation software, do their work, do rendering of the work, and get off. And it was interesting hearing the Stadia live feed, because the introduction to Stadia sounded very much like the introduction to Nimble Collective. You know, utilizing the cloud, lower cost on the client side. You know, you didn't need as expensive a piece of machinery to operate the system. So all that was very cool. And they're, you know, the ability to upgrade GPUs on the fly perform at the performance rate of a cloud service like a Google, and I'm focusing just on Stadia here for a minute, this applies to everybody, is a tremendous boon. If I remember the numbers right, it was something like 10.8 gigaflops, it's an astonishing number, right, to have at your fingertips. What's interesting to me about this, and you know, since it's Google and they own all of the data centers, and the thing that I keep coming back to, because I experience this all the time, is does anybody know Steam's traffic, like concurrent users? It's something, a couple of years ago, it was like 15 million concurrent users. Yeah, I don't know what it is. Yeah. It's high up there. That's a lot of instances to have in the cloud. It doesn't matter who you are. It doesn't matter if you're Google or Microsoft or whoever. But if you're expecting that sort of load on a system that's doing concurrent play, that's a lot of GPUs on standby. So I'm not sure if your listeners are aware. I'm sure most of them are, but it takes a while to spin these things up, mm-hmm. right? It's, think of booting a computer or a server. That's what's going on. So they have to be sitting there in hot standby. So they have to be very good at predicting like how many users are going to have and how many people are going to be playing certain games at certain times and have those things ready so people aren't sitting there frustrated and waiting. And that's the part about this that's fascinating to me.
And that actually is a really good point, because there is going to be a part where Google Stadia won't work and somebody will be very frustrated because they're timing out. They're like, I'm trying to log on, but obviously they can't handle it. And the answer will be, no, it's not that they can't handle it. It's that they predicted wrong when you decided to log on and didn't have a hot GPU waiting for you. Right.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's
right. So and keep that in mind.
Yeah, and that will happen. But
it doesn't undermine the concept necessarily. It's all a matter of whether they can solve that.
If this catches on the way that they think it catches on, I don't want to hog the conversation here, but if this catches on the way they think it's going to catch on, it will rival Netflix for data transmissions. It'll certainly rival anything else out there for GPU usage and CPU usage in the cloud.
Because even though controls don't need to send a whole lot of information back, there is consistent information you're sending from your controller, where in Netflix you press play and that's it for 30 right. minutes to an hour. If not,
and when you're gaming, by the way, so we deal with this all the time. When you're gaming, you notice it, like even if it's like a fraction of a second or a fraction of a second, your brain picks up on it. If you're firing the gun or running from the bad guy or doing whatever you're doing in the game, you will notice if there's lag.
What I was really fascinated by is like, here are these companies that really didn't have a history or kind of a pedigree in gaming. You know, you could say the same about Microsoft, but Microsoft has been publishing games since the early 80s, whether it was Flight Simulator or something else. They have an understanding. And, you know, you can say the same thing about Google and Apple having their stores, but, I mean, is there a point where just being a large, very, you know, very well-heeled and very well-resourced company, you can essentially do a bunch of things, take a lot of risks that if you're a more focused game company, say like EA, that you couldn't afford to do because you have other businesses that you could rely on if something tanks?
Well, I mean, you hit it on the head, right? So these are larger companies. These are companies that do have splinter groups inside of them working on these projects that are as large as dedicated companies like EA. So to me, it's not that the resources within the company is necessarily the problem. And if they hire the right people, and I know that they are, if they hire the right people, then, you know, they'll get the right attention on it. It's more along the lines of the reason I think that, you know, the way Dean expresses this in his article is there's intentional and unintentional. It's more like intentional and backed their way into it. Mm-hmm. Right.
Saw an opportunity
because what's going on is these larger companies have these data centers with GPUs in them, and those GPUs are not being utilized all the time. And the software tries to load level a lot of it, and they try and do predictive analysis and all that stuff. But it, like having a bunch of frozen fish in a warehouse somewhere, they've got a bunch of unused GPU cycles sitting around, and they're like, well, how do we make money off this?
Yeah, I mean, that may make the whole do you have a hot GPU ready for someone to game less of an issue if they're like, well, we're, you know, if it's not ready for someone to game, it's ready for something else. We might as well just have a bunch of them ready all the time. We do anyway.
Yeah, sort of, except what they're doing is they're opening up the gate. So now, you know, they've got, right. you know, the entire state of California wants that frozen fish.
Well, except right? everyone that emails me or talks to me on Twitter says that this is not going to work and they're not going to use it. So apparently no one is going to use this.
Yeah. That's going to happen. That's exactly how it's going to roll out.
Who use it, or maybe the people saying they're not going to use it are lying. I don't know. One of the things that came up last week when we were talking about this was I brought up the idea of video editing in the cloud because of Nimble Collective. And there were some questions that I know you can answer, which is how does your video upload work there? Because if you have a large video, you need to be able to get it to the cloud to start working on it.
Sure. Yeah. There's two modes of thought here, right? If you're already in the cloud and everything you've been doing is in the cloud,
then it's
already there. Otherwise, you just upload the traditional way and you would upload to the system and then work from there. And it, you know, if you've got a number of team members that are working on the same thing, you'll be good. But it's interesting that you mentioned video editing. Video editing in the cloud is harder. A little harder, actually, than what we're doing with animation because of the same reason that gaming is difficult. The editors that are working on a video editor, as you folks all know, like if you try and move a 1/32 of a second and you're not there, or the audio lags, or you're doing it's tricky.
Yeah, there's lag sensitivity in the actions of video editing for sure.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Interesting. Well, thank you, Rom, for answering that for me. I appreciate it.
Sure. Yeah.
And also thanks to everybody who participates in our subreddit. You can submit stories and vote on them at dailytechnewsshow.reddit.com. If you hang out on Facebook a lot, well, we have good news for you. We got a Facebook group, facebook.com/groups/dailytechnewsshow.
Let's take a look at the mailbag.
Let's do it. Comey had a possible edge case scenario for eBay's image search. This was a conversation we were having yesterday and kind of scratching our heads a little bit on how this would work. Comey says, what if you just came from a foreign country and you don't know what the product is or what the leading brands are? For example, let's say you go to Asia and you want to get something similar to Ziploc or Rubbermaid or Purell or Gorillapod. Google wouldn't translate those names into the locally available brands. And people who just came to the U.S. might have the same issue with American brands, but the image search would be able to help them at this point. Of course, Alibaba, Amazon, and others are all becoming international and multilingual, and their text search is getting better. So the example above might be a little contrived.
No, it's good, though. I like that one because there always are weird, like, not weird, but they're always different brands for the same thing. Sometimes they're even owned by the same company. They just operate under a different brand. So looking up Ziploc on eBay, although Ziploc's a weird thing to buy on eBay, but just go with it. You look up Ziploc on eBay and then you click on the image and suddenly you see all these other brands of sandwich bags and you're like, oh, the one that's popular here is that one. Great. Now I know.
Exactly. Yeah.
Interesting.
Oh, never buy used sandwich bags though.
Unless you have to. Thanks to Comey and everybody else who participates in our mailbag every week. And also thanks to Len Peralta. Let's check in with him.
Sure thing. Yeah, you know, I love the idea of unintentional gaming companies. And that's where this image came from. It's kind of taking the Twister take on this whole thing of creating a game called Whoopsie. We made a video game company, the game of unintentional platforms. It's just a family that is enjoying playing on something that isn't really, that was an unintentional.
Yeah, no, I see. So dad's got his right hand on cloud services and then his left hand is on building a data center. And the next thing you know, he's built a game company.
It's so much fun. It's a game for whoever. It's fun for the whole family. And, yes, you can see this right now. If you're one of my patrons, at the $5 level, DTNS lover patron, you get this right now. It's up there right now. You get it pledge, or you can just go the alternate route. Just go to my online store, LenPeraltaStore.com, and get it right there.
Excellent. Thank you, Len. Go to LenPeraltaStore.com. And thank you, Rob DeMillo.
Absolutely.
If folks want to find out more about what you're doing these days, where should they go?
They should go to NimbleCollective.com, or they can go to my About Me page. About me, Rob DeMillo. You can find out where I am there. Yeah.
Excellent. Yeah, that's nimblecollective.com. I'll have the link in the show notes as well.
Mm-hmm. You can also go to sparklabsglobal.com. I'm there as well.
Sparklabsglobal.com as well. Do that too. Folks, we are nearing the first of the month, which means we need to push right over the goal line to get our goal of one more patron than last month. Now, yesterday I said we needed 12. Now we need 9. So over the next 3 days, I'm trusting you, 3 of you each day, sign up to become a DTNS member, and that'll get us where we need to go. It's never been a better time. We have all kinds of cool perks available for people at the various levels, including I'll have an editor's desk tomorrow talking about my thoughts about why tech executives are not stupid, but when to tell if they've made mistakes. That's coming in your feed at the $5 level and above tomorrow. Roger had a column yesterday. We've got updates on Sarah's Live With It with the headphones and a vote for a new device will be coming up in a month or so. That's all available if you become a member right now at patreon.com/DTNS.
If you have feedback for us, our email address is feedback@dailytechnewsshow.com. We're also live Monday through Friday, 4:30 p.m. Eastern, 20:30 UTC. Join us live if you can. Tell a friend and find out more at dailytechnewsshow.com/live.
We're back on Monday. Talk to you then. Remember, become a member.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.
Hopes you have enjoyed this program.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time.
That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.